degrees, drier and brighter with lighter winds for Scotland and Northern Ireland with highs of 14 Celsius here. But for the weekend, high pressure dominates, so it looks like Saturday and Sunday will be mainly dry and bright with plenty of sunshine.
Thank you, Staff. Now we continue our Book of the Week. Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes celebrates the exploits of the first aeronauts who took to the skies in balloons. In 1862, James Glaisher, a meteorologist with a passion for exact measurements, was commissioned by the British Association for the Advancement of Science to investigate the conditions of the upper air. Together with the professional balloon pilot, Henry Coxwell, he embarked on a series of perilous ascents equipped with the latest scientific instruments and a considerable amount of Victorian determination. The reader is Rory Kinnear.
Glaisher and Coxwell's most celebrated high-altitude ascent took place from Wolverhampton on 5th of September 1862. They left the ground at 1 p.m. on a fine, cool autumn afternoon. 40 minutes later, they had risen through the 20,000-foot barrier, where breathing begins to become harder, the temperature drops towards freezing, and the sky above is dark Prussian blue. At 1 p.m. and 54 minutes, Glaisher meticulously recorded an adjusted barometric pressure of 9¾ inches and a height of 29,000 feet, with the balloon still rapidly rising. So far, all had gone smoothly. But now, Coxwell saw that the continuous rotation of the basket had tangled the release valve line overhead. Panting hard, he climbed into the balloon hoop to free it. During the next 3 minutes, both men began to suffer from the extreme cumulative effects of oxygen deprivation. Glaisher found his eyesight blurring, so he could no longer read the fine barometric scale on the instruments, even with the aid of a magnifying glass. This was followed by rapid loss of muscular power in his arms and feet, and then in his neck. In looking at the barometer, my head fell on my left shoulder. When he tried to straighten it, it fell, doll-like, onto his right shoulder. He tried to reach for a bottle of brandy, but his arm went slack and fell across his instrument table. His legs gave way, and he slumped back against the side of the basket. He found he could no longer move his head at all, and could only stare upwards at Coxwell struggling in the balloon hoop. I dimly saw Mr. Coxwell and endeavoured to speak, but could not. In an instant, intense darkness overcame me, so that the optic nerve lost power suddenly, but I was still conscious with as active a brain as at the moment while writing this. I thought I had been seized by asphyxia and believed I should experience nothing more, as death would come unless we speedily descended. Meanwhile, Henry Coxwell, suffering from similar loss of muscle power, was struggling in the balloon hoop trying to disentangle the trapped valve line. He kept losing his grip and nearly falling backwards out of the balloon. Pulling the valve line was the one way they could release gas and get the balloon to descend. Coxwell eventually freed the line so it hung down into the basket, but he now found his hands were completely frozen and incapable of grasping the line or pulling it. He also noted that his hands had gone black. He was unable to grip any rope sufficiently to manoeuvre himself back down into the basket. But after some experiments, he found that by locking both elbows across the diameter of the hoop, he was just able to lower himself down inside it and then drop safely into the basket. Here he found Glaisher lying completely unconscious, his face quite tranquil, and could not wake him. Seizing the swaying valve line in the crook of his arm, Coxwell made one last effort and caught the rope between his teeth. He pulled hard, dipping his head two or three times. High overhead, he heard the gas begin to vent and knew they might just be saved. He rested for some moments, panting against the side of the basket, then turned to the sprawled and immobile body of his friend Glaisher and began to shake him. Coxwell recalled, "Never shall I forget those painful moments of doubt and suspense as to Mr. Glacier's state when no response came to my questions. I began to fear that he would never take any more readings." But Glaisher was not dead. To Coxwell's immense relief, he began to stir and mumble. Glaisher's first impression, on returning to consciousness, was of a tall figure bending over him and gently inquiring about temperature readings and instrumental observations. Glaisher realised that Coxwell was endeavouring to rouse him by asking strictly scientific questions. Even at such a desperate moment, Victorian politesse and scientific etiquette were wonderfully sustained. "I then heard him speak more emphatically," remembered Glaisher, "but could not see, speak, or move. I heard him say, 'Do try to take temperature and barometer observations. Do try.' And then the instruments became dimly visible. Then Mr. Coxwell, and very shortly I saw clearly. Next I rose from my seat and looked round as though waking from sleep, though not refreshed, and said to Mr. Coxwell, 'I've been insensible.' He said, 'You have, and I too, very nearly.' I then took a pencil in my hand to begin observations. Mr. Coxwell told me that he had lost the use of his hands, which were black, and I poured brandy over them." Glaisher does not add what was surely the case, that they both swallowed large mouthfuls of the brandy too. Afterwards, Glaisher minutely calculated what the final height attained in those lost moments might have been. His last accurate barometer reading of 9¾ inches indicated above 29,000 feet, implying a height of about 5¾ miles. It had been made at precisely 1 p.m. and 54 minutes. This was just before the crisis with the valve line. Glaisher calculated the climb rate as about 1,000 feet a minute. He became insensible 3 minutes later at 1 p.m. and 57 minutes, by which time the balloon would have risen another 3,000 feet. Glaisher remained totally insensible for a further 7 minutes, but, as he noted meticulously, he was only able to read his instruments accurately again at 2 p.m. and 7 minutes. At that point, his barometer indicated that the balloon was now at an altitude of approximately 27,000 feet and descending rapidly. The crucial question was, what happened during those lost 13 minutes between the two accurate barometer readings of 29,000 feet ascending and 27,000 feet descending? Glaisher estimated that the balloon probably continued to rise for at least half of the elapsed time, say 6 or 7 minutes, before Coxwell succeeded in pulling the valve line and starting their rapid descent. Therefore, at the climb rate of 1,000 feet a minute, this gave a possible increase in height of between 6 and 7,000 feet, or a maximum altitude of about 35 or 36,000 feet. In fact, one of their other instruments, a max-min thermometer which recorded height in terms of decreased temperature, suggested a maximum altitude of 37,000 feet, or just over 7 miles. But in a letter sent to the Times, Glaisher modestly claimed a maximum altitude of 32,000 feet, or 6 miles. This record would stand for the rest of the century. The significance of the ascent was not immediately realised. On the 6th of September 1862, the Times published a brief paragraph, simply headed, "A Recent Balloon Ascent." It reported, without comment, that Mr. Glaisher and Mr. Coxwell had attained an altitude of 6 miles and had used a new Negretti and Zambra mercury barometer, which was more accurate than any previous instrument. 4 days later, it published the letter from Glaisher, briefly outlining the circumstances of the ascent, but drawing particular attention to Coxwell's climbing into the hoop and cool handling of the crisis with the valve line. Glaisher remarked that this was completely in character for Coxwell, and that he had always had complete confidence in his ability to handle any crisis. He also praised the excellent quality of the coal gas provided by Mr. Proud, the chief engineer of the Wolverhampton Gasworks. Glaisher later published a fuller version of this letter in his classic book Travels in the Air, 1871. His laconic account became one of the most famous documents in the history of ballooning. It was completed with the characteristically dry observation that no inconvenience followed his and Coxwell's nearly fatal asphyxia and frostbite, though very regrettably they lost 5 of their 6 carrier pigeons. On landing safely in the deep countryside near Ludlow in Shropshire, the two aeronauts could find no conveyance of any kind, so Glaisher stoically walked 7 or 8 miles to the nearest village inn at Cold Weston for a pint of beer. Ever after, he kept the small aneroid barometer, which had recorded the unofficial 7-mile maximum altitude, as a good luck charm in his pocket and would not fly without it. It was this instrument that Mr. Coxwell read when we were 7 miles high, and I, at the time, in a state of insensibility. It has been up with me in every high ascent since. The ascent was initially made famous by a magnificent third leader in the Times, which appeared on the 11th September 1862. On a page largely dominated by depressing news of the American Civil War, it turned its readers' attention to higher matters, opening in fine style. Poetry has described some famous descents into the subterranean world, but we have just had an ascent such as the world has never heard of or dreamt of. Two men have been nearer by some miles to the moon and the stars than all the race of man before them. The leader gave details of Glaisher's scientific reasons for making such a perilous attempt, but then turned to reflect on Coxwell's peculiar brand of courage. For 10 whole minutes, Mr. Coxwell ascended alone, or rather worse than alone, with his companion insensible before his eyes, in a region 6 miles distant from the earth. That is a very extraordinary 10 minutes, if we think of it, that solitary command, without a rival, of the boundless regions of space. It deserves its place among the unpatrolled junctures and critical and striking moments of war, politics, or discovery. The journalist was soon imagining, for the benefit of his readers, the possible nightmare outcome. Another minute, and Mr. Coxwell would have been stretched by the side of his companion, and a car containing 2 human bodies would have been mounting to worlds unknown and encountering aerial storms and shipwrecks so removed from all sublunary experience that we can hardly form the faintest image of the reality. For a moment, the fascinating possibilities of science fiction overtook the Times journalist as he gleefully imagined the 2 aeronauts, rather in manner of an Edgar Allan Poe story, sailing on upwards into outer space, their balloon eventually to be dashed upon the bleak shore of another planet, or like a second Noah's Ark, finding a resting place upon some Ararat of the moon. Little space was given to any of the actual scientific data obtained by Glaisher, or the clear implication that the life-sustaining envelope of breathable oxygen which surrounded the entire Earth was alarmingly thin. What counted for the Times was the experience, particularly Coxwell's experience, which was that of the intrepid explorer. It demonstrated moral courage, a courage quite unlike that of the soldier. The man of science has to fight alone, and by himself against the faintness of nature, without men shouting, or flags flying, or trumpets clanging around him. This theme was taken up in a popular lithograph, Mr. Glaisher Insensible at the Height of 7 Miles. It was reproduced in numerous journals in Britain, France, and America. The image has a strange quality of nightmare suspension and presents scientific research as pure Victorian melodrama. Its 2 protagonists grimly complement each other, the one active, the other passive, but both in imminent peril. Coxwell is overhead, perilously astraddle the balloon hoop, struggling to untangle the valve line and likely to pitch backwards into the fathomless abyss at any moment. Glaisher is slumped below, fallen back semi-conscious, and apparently dying against the balloon basket, clutching at his throat with one hand, the other dangling limply over the side, hanging into the void. Around them are strapped an orderly scientific array of barometers, compasses, and other precision instruments, but all of them are now useless. The picture seems to carry an allegorical message, skillfully developed from that of the Times editorial. The scientist presses the extreme limits of nature at his peril. The well-ordered world of the Victorian scientific laboratory is transported into the hostile chaos of the upper atmosphere. Order and purpose become disorder and terror. But what is most fearful about this picture is the sense that death will not come by falling downwards, towards the familiar clouds and the earth 7 miles beneath, but by falling upwards, into the endless, empty, unknown blackness of space above.
Rory Kinnear was reading from Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4. Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Thursday the 23rd of May. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North at Zero, South at Zero, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, Irish Sea, Malin, Hebrides, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, low Denmark 994, expected 40s 991 by 1800 Thursday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, North at Zero. Northerly 5 to 7, increasing gale 8 or severe gale 9 for a time, then becoming variable 4 later. Rain or squally showers, good, occasionally poor. South at Zero, northeast 40s. Northwesterly becoming cyclonic 6 to gale 8, then